You're listening to China Manufacturing Decoded from the Sophie's Group.
Hi, welcome back to the podcast from the Sophie's Group. And Andrew Amonovin is joining me, Adrian, who's hosting today. And we're talking about China's tech revolution, which we could call the Rise of the Dragon. And that's quite appropriate because this year is, of course, the Year of the Dragon, if you remember from Chinese New Year, right? So both Andrew and I have got some history in China. And over the years, I mean, we've probably spent cumulatively decades there. And we've been looking at what huge Chinese tech companies are out there, why there's been a boom. And Andrew's going to go into that and give some examples, for example, about Huawei, which is a name that probably needs no introduction. And this is more than just smartphones. So we'll be talking about some of the other interesting tech that China is leading the way on. And at the moment, it would be remiss not to mention the relationship between the US and China, because technology is really in the middle of this kind of trade war that's going on. There's a serious tech rivalry going on, which also includes the Taiwanese semiconductor industry, which is sort of caught in the middle as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about that later on. But just to kick it off, Andrew, welcome.
Hey, Adrian, great to be with you again. You know, I think I remember you said that you were going to visit China lately. What did you think about, you know, this time compared to, you know, last time you visited? I had a good friend of mine that told me every time that he goes to China, he sees completely, like, totally new China. How was your visit?
Well, I mentioned this on last week's podcast when I was talking with Renaud. We were talking about how China has changed since 2007. And I said, here in the UK, there's probably not been a huge amount of change visibly since 2007. Of course, there are some things, but in China, the whole place has probably renewed about three times over. So it moves very, very quickly. I think from a technology standpoint, China is virtually cashless now. So you need to use apps to pay for everything, which is actually pretty easy, and foreigners can do it quite easily now. In Shenzhen in particular, and Shenzhen is not typical of all Chinese cities, so be careful about that. But Shenzhen in particular has moved over to probably, I think it's fair to say, the majority are EVs on the roads. So there are still some gas vehicles, but all taxis, all buses, a lot of cars, are Chinese EVs and Teslas, which are really loved in China. But of course, they are made in China, so that's okay by Chinese people. And so that's a big difference.
Yeah, I remember 10 years ago when I was in China and first time I was in one of those taxis, I was pretty shocked and surprised. Wow, they already have EV taxis.
Yeah.
And that was at the time that Tesla was just trying to get started on building their car. So, you know, I just think that China technology-wise is moving, how do you say, so much faster ahead that it's pretty much gotten everybody off guard. And I think that it would be good to talk about what factors are really fueling this China's tech revolution. What's causing them to really be ahead so fast? I mean, the progress is just amazing.
Interesting. Yeah, I agree. And there's nowhere else really quite like it. I mean, there may be the odd smaller country like Singapore, for example, where they're able to enact things and change very, very quickly. And I think that's by virtue of the fact that it's such a small sort of territory that it's possible to do it. But when you compare with China, which is, you know, 1.3, 1.4 billion people, how do you steer a ship like that so quickly? So, yeah, I think any comments you've got about how they're actually doing this, that's definitely interesting. Another point I'd make as well is that it is quite unique, because recently I went to Japan as well as China. And I think most people in the West would think, oh, Japan, yeah, that's quite futuristic. Well, compared to China, I really think that it's It's kind of a combination of being old-fashioned and futuristic. In some ways, they are very technical, but in other ways, they're very, very old-fashioned, whereas in China, they're not old-fashioned really anymore. And I think you can see this because you look at even the oldest people in China, and we're talking maybe people in their 80s, they all use smartphones. They're using smartphones to make, you know, digital payments and things like that. Think about if you're listening from the West, for example, wherever you might be, whether that's, I don't know, the US or England or France or whatever, how many 80-year-olds in your country are using smartphones? And I think that is really a good way to describe how quickly China has been changing, for sure.
Yeah, one comment on what you mentioned on regarding Japan, and I totally agree. I think it was 15, 20 years ago when I went to Japan, and yeah, you're right. My first feeling was, wow, you know, Japan is really futuristic. But now if you compare the two, you know, I don't know if you've been to Shanghai, that new Shanghai, the old Shanghai, the way they put that together is just incredible. I mean, it really does give you amazing feeling of like being in the future or something. But let's talk about what is fueling this progress, incredible progress. I would think that one of them is definitely government investment. I mean, the government is definitely subsidizing these technology companies and R&D. They're pouring money into these companies right from the start when they feel like there's a amazing prospect. And maybe they even nurture some of these new startups to when they're definitely some ideas there that could come out to be huge. They're giving them maybe tax breaks, you know, helping them with the infrastructure, helping them with maybe with the equipment. They foster innovation. They do a lot of things that I think it's unusual compared to other countries. In other countries, I think things are a little bit different, right? You know, you have to apply for a grant if you qualify. Well, you get some money. If you don't, you don't. But in China, I think government has kind of a active way of actually hands-on trying to cultivate some of these technologies, which is really different, I think, in some ways.
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, I think you still have to apply in some ways, but I think there's two strands, right? Number one, the Chinese government is quite forceful in the way that it will go after a sector. So it'll say, right, green technology, we need to become a world leader in renewable energy generation, right? And so over the last, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years, guess what? They've invested into it, and they now probably are arguably the world leader in renewables. Don't get me wrong, China still uses a heck of a lot of coal, and we all know that. But when it comes to renewables, they really are leading the way, you know, with solar and others. And so the government have basically said, we're going to focus on that, and they've done it. And I think that's a bit of a difference with, let's say, Western governments, because they tend to be a lot more short term, because they have very short terms of, you know, like in the UK Parliament, 5 years. And so what are you going to get done in 5 years? And the answer is arguably very little. But I'm not going to get too political about the UK right now. But in China, they have that stability there where they can make these long term strategic decisions and actually push them through. So I think that's one thing. And I think the next one is that they've set up a lot of zones around China, which are like sort of, I don't know, free trade zones and things like that. And they basically say to businesses, look, if you come to this particular zone where we're trying to foster more technology innovation, we're going to give you subsidies. We're going to, I don't know, pay the rent of your office for, you know, five years. You'll pay less tax. So they get tax breaks and things like that. So they sort of plonk this new zone down into a city. You know, again, Shenzhen's a great example. There are different ones around Shenzhen. And then, of course, companies are drawn to that. So they sort of make it very available. But you do still need to go to the zone and you need to set up the business there and you apply. But yeah, I mean, it kind of feels like it's more visible here, that's for sure.
Yeah, of course. And I do agree on everything you said. That's exactly right. But you know, there's something else that I think that fuels this whole business, right?
Oh, yeah.
Something called a STEM education. And STEM stands for S for science, T for technology, E for engineering, and M for mathematics. I mean, you and I both know, you know, we've seen in TikTok, we've seen in other YouTube where a lot of Chinese kids are amazing performers when it comes to, you know, comparing them with age with other countries. I mean, we have seen it all the time. It's not one time. So there's something going on, right? And even in the Olympics and yeah, right. So I'm thinking this STEM thing is real and it's definitely helping. You know, basically they're cultivating and they have this almost like a pipeline of skilled engineers and scientists and programmers that it just keeps coming, you know, keeps coming and they're educating and they're probably changing their and updating their education system all the time. And this is a huge help, I think, for technology wise, at least. They've got a way of improving and coming up with a new technological advances. So I think that's one other thing. And then, of course, how about e-commerce? You know, we have heard of a lot of Chinese e-commerce that used to be just small, you know, website. But now look at Alibaba, for example, and JD.com and some other ones, AliExpress. And there's a whole bunch of, you know, websites that their power in terms of what you can do with that website is just amazing. You know, you can pretty much find anything in Alibaba. I don't know if you ever used any of these websites before.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, in China, here in the West, no, I wouldn't generally. I probably would be more likely to use Western ones like eBay or Amazon, of course. I mean, who doesn't, right? But in China, when we think about Amazon being ubiquitous in the West, and no doubt it is for many countries, again, the States, the UK, and I mean, the list goes on, Australia, I guess. But like in China, Alibaba, Tmall, JD.com, these are big, big operations.
Right.
Way bigger than the Western ones, by the way, in terms of the number of shoppers.
Totally, totally agree. You know, one thing I wanted us to discuss was the story of Huawei, how Huawei got so big. And sure. I remember when I was working for Nokia, I never forget that we had this really cute little candy bar phone that was supposed to be very functioning and at the same time, you know, affordable and very reliable. So we were about to launch it, like in April timeframe. And, 1 month before we launched it, everyone came back and say, "Hey, you know, what's going on in China?" Because somebody launched our phone in China already.
Huh. Was that Huawei?
No, it wasn't, but it was some company actually, basically launching a fake copy of our phone ahead of our schedule. And I remember getting one of those and looking at it. Oh my God. It was just so much like a AAA copy. It looked exactly like what we had.
Who leaked the drawings?
Probably. And that's something that, kind of, you know, warned our team. Well, what's going on there? Did somebody leak it from our team or where? What's going on? It was just really scary at some point. Yeah. But talking about Huawei, in the last few years, I think there was some kind of a telecom, or let's say, war was going on between Huawei, Chinese mobile phone manufacturer, and Apple and a whole bunch of other tech companies in the U.S. But Huawei's roots really goes back to, you know, telecom equipment. So they used to make sort of like telecommunication routers and boosters and power amplifiers. But
I think they still do, no?
Of course they do. Yeah, they do.
And do they not also make the industrial telecoms equipment, i.e., you know, the infrastructure that needs to go into, you know, have 5G network and things like that?
Yes, exactly. The 5G network. At that time, it was, I think, the 3G network. Yeah, they do all that. But then they decided, you know, we might as well get into the whole thing ourselves as well.
Sure.
And they have been extremely successful in this area. You know, they've been doing a lot of vertical integration, unlike some other, you know, competitors. You know, Huawei designs their own chipset, which is really the main thing that distinguishes them from any other manufacturer in the world. Of course, I think Apple is doing it also currently, at that time, Huawei was trying to kind of do something that will be different, more like Chinese version of you know, the operating system, or and just the software development that went into this. It's just massive and very unique, and with unique features that really applies to Chinese you know, customers.
Yep.
And I don't know if you've ever had a Huawei phone. I haven't, but I have seen some of my friends have it. They're pretty nice phones, very functional, beautiful display. I haven't heard any complaints from my friends about Huawei.
Well, yeah. I was recently in China for Chinese New Year, and I was there for quite a while, and I'm regularly there anyway. And I actually did go to a Huawei store, and I bought something. I bought a power bank. It's not a phone, of course, and yeah, you can get power banks anywhere, but I wanted to get a branded one because, well, you don't want to buy cheap power banks unless you enjoy your house burning down, and that's not for me. So why did I buy a Huawei one? Because it is a trusted brand, and they are known to be high quality. And let me tell you, if you go into a Huawei store now, it's really not a great deal different to an Apple store in China, at least. And they have a very strong range of products. They've got, you know, all the earbuds, they've got tablets, they've got the huge range of phones, and they have different ranges. They have like normal Huawei's, then they have like a fancier one, and then maybe some budget ones. They have really a huge amount of phones and telecoms, you know, stuff, and also related accessories as well. So yeah, they have a whole ecosystem. But yeah, I would say that they are known to be high quality. I think a lot of Chinese people like them because they know that they're very reliable and it's a quality piece of equipment.
Yeah, totally. And you know, I'd love to have one myself, but being American, we're not allowed to have one, right?
Well, maybe not in the States. I don't know. I don't know if they sell them. They sell them in the UK. You can get a Huawei phone.
Right. But anyway, you know, Huawei pretty much started selling in Africa, South Asia, and, you know, some of the other countries, Middle East, originally. But once they got really strong and had high-tech phones that could actually be used in U.S., all of a sudden, same thing that is happening to TikTok happened with them first. And there was a ban on using Huawei and all the networks like AT&T and T-Mobile. They stopped carrying those phones. And it just, you know, it was clear that there was started something big at that time. Yeah, right.
But I mean, in terms of their global expansion, it has happened. Despite this, it's happened. I mean, I can't speak for the States. I'm not 100% sure. But is it the case that Huawei phones are currently banned in the States? I don't think they are in the UK, that's for sure. And so I think as a global consumer product now, they are in the consumer consciousness. Like when people think phones, people do think Huawei.
Right. I mean, I think you can still buy in States, but you can't use it in the network. You can use it through Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay. I see.
There is certain restrictions on Chinese phones, which is a shame, I think. You know, as a consumer, you really want to use what's available in the world from any country, right?
Well, in theory, with Huawei, you're getting arguably similar quality to an iPhone, but at a lower cost. So, you know, why would a consumer not like that? I suppose if you look at a security point of view, you could say, oh, well, Chinese products, they could be a risk for security, you know, like TikTok. I mean, it's like, is it going to get banned in the States or not? It's on a knife edge, I guess. With Chinese technology, okay, yeah. Huawei is a Chinese brand, but let's not forget that the where's your iPhone made? Probably in China. So, you know, is that a similar risk? Where do we draw the line?
I totally agree with you. And that's a good subject for discussion by our listeners. But it's kind of like somebody saying, you know, you can't buy BMW.
Right.
And you know, how do you control that? I mean, there's just so many people. But anyway, I think that one other thing that I've noticed lately, at least in the last 10 years, some other companies have been amazingly powerful, you know, in China, like DJI. They are pretty much dominating the drone market in innovation and user-friendly designs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I love their different models for different activities.
Yeah.
They're just amazing product. And I remember DJI used to use GoPro, but then now they have their own cameras that are supposed to be even better than GoPro, which is amazing.
No doubt.
Tencent, a huge gaming and social media giant, you know, a major player in the internet space, right? How about Baidu, China's Google, basically.
Maybe not so well known as DJI with foreign listeners, though.
Right.
I don't think, because outside of China, you're not likely to use Baidu that much. But yeah, you got to know if you're going to go to China, you're not going to be using Google. Well, at least not without a VPN. You know, like Baidu is basically China's Google. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And I don't know, did you use Baidu, and how was your experience?
I can't really say I've used it particularly.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, that's just a few amazing companies that I think that we should think about as far as how their technology is moving compared to the rest of the market, right? The rest of the world.
Well, DJI is a good example, and that's a Shenzhen company as well, by the way. So another one from Shenzhen. But if I'm thinking drones, I don't think I can even think of any other brands. The only one I really know is DJI. And all right, I'm not necessarily a drone expert or a drone fan, but if you ask me about cars or phones, I can name a lot of brands. But when it comes to drones, I can only name DJI. So that kind of shows that how well they've dominated that market.
Yeah, I do remember like 20 years ago or so is when I went to a toy shop to buy a few gadgets.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw this guy was, you know, flying drone in the shopping mall going left and right. I was like, what's that? He said, oh, it's a drone. I was like, wow. I bought one, and of course I broke it as soon as I got to my hotel.
Of course.
I had no idea how to fly it. But I do remember that here it is, a company started from toy drone and now, you know, high-tech drones, all kinds for various uses, right? Agriculture, you know, education, photography, and so on. One thing I was going to talk about and see what you think is, when it comes to these companies, one thing is totally different, right? They can gather all kinds of data from consumers without anybody minding it, which is kind of different than in, at least in US.
I'm really not sure about that. I think that the whole China harvests data on an industrial scale and you have no privacy in China and China don't respect people's privacy or, you know, arguments like this. Yeah, maybe there's some truth in it. But on the other hand, let's say you are talking in your kitchen to your partner. And you mention, I don't know, like, oh, yeah, so the weather's nice right now. And maybe we could use some garden chairs. And I'm talking about in Western countries or in foreign countries outside of China. What's the bet that your phone or your tablet or your computer is going to start showing you ads for garden chairs pretty quickly? Now that I'm saying it out loud, I'm probably going to start getting these ads as well. And you also, Andrew, and the listeners as well. If you're playing this out loud and you've got devices around, sorry guys, but you're probably going to get garden chair ads soon. I mean, I think from a government point of view, that's a different argument completely. Do the government have more information on the average Chinese citizen than Western governments? But I don't know. I mean, let's be quite honest. If you've got a passport, if you've got a driving license, if you've, filed your taxes online, et cetera, you're telling me your government doesn't have a ton of information about you? So I'm not sure that the argument about how China treats people's information. I'm not saying those arguments aren't right, but I'm not entirely sure that we can say that any other country is whiter than white in that respect. So I don't know. I don't know. I think all technology gets data these days pretty much. And if you're going to use a smartphone, you've just got to accept that you're going to be tracked, your location's going to be tracked, you're going to be listened to. You got to read those terms and conditions, which I know I don't, but they're very, very long, and they have a lot of information in them that basically says we're going to take all of your information.
That is funny what you said about the garden tools. And I think we're going to be getting information about GoPro
Yeah,
also.
maybe, yeah, that's right, and DJI drones.
Yeah, DJI drones. No, but that's true. It makes total sense. Now, what about this rivalry that is going on between US and China? How does that
Well,
impact?
you're American, you probably feel this kind of a little bit more acutely than me, right? But I mean, this has been going on for a while. It's been going on since even pre-Trump, right? I think it started when Obama was still in.
I mean, it's been going on for a while, I think.
Yeah.
Almost like a cold war for the technology. But I think that some of the areas that we could say that is really coming out right now is the chip wars, in US and China over Taiwan because of Taiwan semiconductor chipset that they're designing and building that are really not enough of it for the Google's type and the other big companies that are making huge servers and so forth. And this is what's somewhat, I guess, one of the factors that is causing this rivalry between US and China. And then of course there's probably other reasons, but right now US has somewhat dominance in some of the semiconductor and software solutions, but but China is coming up, is catching up, let's say, pretty fast. This is worrying US big companies, and at least what we've seen, some of this is related to directly to the technological advances that China has made recently.
Yeah, I think with when it comes to semiconductors, the sort of containment of the Chinese semiconductor industry, I think it has bitten. I think that industry in China has suffered. I suppose it's very understandable that America would seek to dominate. Is that a fair word? Suppress? Is that a fair word? This because it's arguably not in the Western sphere of influence led by the States' interest to have China with, maybe a global monopoly on semiconductors because it's such a key technology. So I get it. But when China's industry is so reliant on technology, of course, they're going to struggle and fight to keep that industry going and not be suppressed because it's just so important to them as well. The whole topic of suppression of countries in the interest of, being the dominant power. Where does it end? I think then we start to get political, and then we start to talk about things like wars. And I don't think that's what this particular episode is about. But is there a better way? Is there a way to cooperate? You mentioned Taiwan, and Taiwan is American ally and is the center of the semiconductor industry, at least at the moment, one would say. And of course, America wants to have the sway over what Taiwan's doing and where it's selling, I suppose, rather than China. But I think historically, China's had a pretty decent relationship with the Taiwanese semiconductor industry, right?
Yeah, I mean, to my knowledge, they have. And I think that China and the Taiwan have had great relationship for years. But recently, due to this U.S. involvement, I think it kind of has caused a little bit of tension, at least geopolitical tension between the two countries. And then, of course, there is that scare from, I guess, U.S. side, just in case. What happens if China takes over Taiwan Semiconductor? What's going to happen? Are they going to raise the prices, or are they going to completely cut U.S. companies from getting any of these?
Yeah.
So there is that little bit of what you mentioned, the fact that there is a monopoly in that area. And this is, in a way, in any kind of industry, when you have monopoly, it's pretty scary. But I think that it's a big problem that no one really has a good answer. I don't know, collaboration is the key or not, better communication between two countries. I don't know what is going to help this situation, but I think that right now, this is one of the main key issues that is causing all the geopolitical tension between the two countries.
Well, I think it's put the frighteners onto the West to an extent, because if we look at lithium ion batteries as well, and when we talk about key products for today's world, right, semiconductors and lithium ion batteries are right up there. I'm just sitting at my desk right now. I'm literally looking at three or four devices that have, well, semiconductors and lithium ion batteries. But my understanding is China, let's say, controls about a third of all the world's lithium, production, because they've invested so much into the developing world. So you got countries like, I think, Nigeria, maybe Mali, places like that in Africa, which are, arguably don't have particularly good security and political situations. And then you've got South America, Chile. I think these are the sorts of countries where they're producing lithium. And again, the Chinese are really well in there as well. And they've invested a lot into the, lithium mining and processing. And that's happened. That's not they're trying to invest. That's already happening. So China has got a really strong control over lithium and the production of lithium ion batteries. So if that goes away and you can't get access to that, what happens when so many technologies, as we mentioned at the top of this show, look at Shenzhen, most of the EVs on the road now, well, sorry, most of the vehicles on the road are EVs. Well, eventually it's probably going to go that way around the world, at least to an extent, maybe not as much as in Shenzhen, but we're going to see a lot more. Well, what happens if access to lithium ion batteries is throttled? Well, that's a big problem to development. So I think that scared everyone. And when we look at semiconductors, if that happens again, how are we going to get enough semiconductors for our needs? Well, again, a frightening thought, because without semiconductors, nothing. No phones, no planes, no satellites, no anything, right? So I think it's definitely put the frighteners on everyone.
I totally agree. And I think that the fright is, maybe it's the right thing to say and right thing to feel, because of the fact that China is progressing in this area so fast, and they got a hold, a key hold on, like you said, lithium ion batteries and key technologies like semiconductor. Huawei has actually come up with a phone. It's called Mate 50 series.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a satellite phone. I remember Iridium made a satellite phone way back, and it was like a huge, like a brick, like a huge walkie-talkie with a massive antenna. And you had to pay like thousands of dollars to even make a satellite phone, a satellite message, satellite phone call. And here it is. Apparently, Mate 50 can make a satellite text messages, whole bunch of things. And it's just a regular mobile phone, like an iPhone. It does not have necessarily a massive size, weight, or antenna. you know. So I don't know how they have done it. I think that Elon Musk has a new phone called Pi that has that one capability as well. I don't know comparing the two, which one is better or not. But the fact that I'm saying that here is another technology that they have mastered already ahead of perhaps because Mate 50 is already out. I don't know if Pi is out. I don't have one myself. So there's another technology that is making waves, and that is a new Chinese chip manufacturer that actually they have come up with analog photoelectric chip, and basically everything inside this chip operates with light and light speed. And what's unique about this is that now, you know, everything is going to be a lot faster. For example, some of the communication within the chip is going to be 3,000 times faster, according to this article. And in terms of energy use, it's going to be 4 million times less energy consumption and then some of the top of the line, you know, GPUs. So if you look at this kind of a technology coming from China, I guess it will be scary for US and some other countries trying to figure out how are they going to catch up with such a giant in technology.
And maybe they can't. I think in the States, right? And you can correct me if I'm wrong, under Biden, I think he's put quite a bit of onus on getting more semiconductor manufacturing happening in the States itself as well. Is that right?
I heard about that. I heard that somewhere in, not sure, is middle America, they're going to create a few semiconductor manufacturing areas similar to Taiwan Semiconductor. I don't know all the details. I think that Intel got some kind of a grant also for improving their chip and maybe developing some chipset in the same area. So there is the movement going on in that area, which I think hopefully it's going to help. US manufacturers come up to speed. But like you said, you know, I don't know if they can catch up. So all of this is contributing to security debate, right? So that's going to affect our data privacy, our global supply chain, our global security. I mean, these are really good debates, I think.
Yeah, and it's going to keep rolling and rolling. But when it comes to technology, what we can say is that the rise of Chinese technology, it's touched everybody. You know, there's no way we're going to have such high technology products at such low prices if it wasn't for the West investing lots of money into China over the years, and then China basically being able to build that infrastructure and make all of these products. And then it follows, of course, that Chinese brands themselves will rise because China have used all of that investment and the learning, and they're building their own brands. And I completely understand that.
Exactly, and totally understandable to me as well. And this is exactly why it seems to be a dilemma right now. What do you do and how do you handle data privacy, like in terms of like TikTok issue, or even Huawei? And then what happens if, you know, I mean, what is it? I don't know the statistics about global supply chain, but there are a lot of Chinese made products that you know flow to the rest of the world. I think this would be a good topic for our listeners to chime in.
There are a couple of questions. So let us know what you feel about this. We've been talking about the rise of China's tech sector, the rise of the dragon, and giving you some examples of, you know, some of the successes. We've also discussed some examples of how people are nervous of China and its rise. So how do you think this is going to impact the global balance of power, first of all? And secondly, what ethical considerations should we take into account when dealing with emerging technologies from China? So we'd love to know what you think about these questions. And normally we share the podcast on Sophie's LinkedIn, for example. So you could go and let us know there, or you can let us know in the comments of the blog post version of this, which is also on sophies.com's blog. But do get in touch. I'm sure many of the listeners have some sort of relationship to China. Maybe you're currently buying goods from China or getting your products made in China. So I am quite interested to hear what your feelings are. And if you've been to China recently, let us know. What struck you about technology in China? I mean, definitely I feel that it's a lot more technical and a lot more advanced than the UK, having been to China recently. But I don't know, do you feel that it's like that when compared to your country? So yeah, Andrew, this has been fascinating. I've quite enjoyed this chat. I think it's always interesting to talk about the differences between China and the rest of the world. Definitely worth covering periodically and looking at some of the interesting stories like you've covered, Huawei, DJI, all of these big brands. Where did they come from? Where are they going? The US-China rivalry. Good stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Adrian. I am definitely interested to see what our listeners are going to respond.
Great. So back again next week as normal. And don't forget to like, share, and review. Thanks again for listening to this podcast brought to you by the Sophie's Group. We're on a mission to provide you with everything you need to manufacture effectively in Asia, including inspections, auditing, new product development support, contract manufacturing, 3PL warehousing and fulfillment, and much, much more across Asia's key manufacturing areas. Visit us at sofeast.com, that's sofeast.com, to learn more and get help. If you've enjoyed the podcast today, please do rate, review, and share, because it will really help others discover us too.